Chapter 10. During our seventh night on the island, it rained. It was one of those tropical storms that comes up swiftly without warning. We were asleep on the palm mats that I'd made, but it awakened us immediately. The rain sounded like bullets hitting on the dried palm frond roof. We ran out into it, shouting and letting the fresh water hit our bodies. It was cool and felt good. Timothy yelled that his catchment was working. He had taken more boards from the top of the raft and had made a large trough that would catch the rain. He'd picked up bamboo lengths on the beach and had fitted them together into a short pipe to funnel the rainwater into our 10-gallon keg. It rained for almost 2 hours, and Timothy was quite angry with himself for not making a second catchment because the keg was soon filled and overflowing. We stayed out in the cool rain for 20 or 30 minutes and then went back inside. The roof leaked badly, but we didn't mind. We got on our mats and opened our mouths to the sweet, fresh water. Stewcat was huddled in a miserable ball over in a corner, Timothy said, not enjoying it at all. I liked the rain because it was something I could hear and feel, not something I must see. It peppered in bursts against the frond roof, and I could hear the drips as it leaked through. The squall wind was in the tops of the palms, and I could imagine how they looked in the night sky, thrashing against each other high over our little quay. I wanted it to rain all night. We talked for a long time when the rain began to slack off. Timothy asked me about my mother and father. I told him all about them and about how we lived in Charlew, getting very lonesome and homesick while I was telling him. He kept saying, "Ah, that be true?" Then Timothy told me what he could remember from his own childhood. It wasn't at all like mine. He'd never gone to school and was working on a fishing boat by the time he was 10. It almost seemed the only fun he had was once a year at carnival when he'd put frangipani leaves around his ankles and dress up in a donkey hide to parade around with Maki Jumbies, the spirit chasers, while the old ladies of Charlotte Amali danced the bambola around them. He chuckled. "I'd drink plenty rum those 3 days of carnival." I could picture him in his donkey skin, wheeling around to the music of the steel bands. They had them in Willemstad, too. Because it had been on my mind, I told him that my mother didn't like black people, and asked him why. He answered slowly, "I don't like some white people my own self, but 'twould be outrageous if I didn't like any of them." Wanting to hear it from Timothy, I asked him why there were different colors of skin, white and black, brown and red, and he laughed back. "Why be fish different color, or flower be different color? I true don't know, Philippe, but I true think beneath the skin is all the same." Herr Jonker had said something like that in school, but it did not mean quite as much as when Timothy said it. Long after he'd begun to snore in the dripping hut, I thought about it. Suddenly, I wished my father and mother could see us there together on the little island. I moved close to Timothy's big body before I went to sleep. I remember smiling in the darkness. He felt neither white nor black. In the morning, the air was crisp and the quay smelled fresh and clean. Timothy cooked a small fish, a pompano, that he'd speared at dawn down on the reef. Neither of us had felt so good or so clean since we had been aboard the Hato. And without discussing it, we both thought this might be the day an aircraft would swing up into the Devil's Mouth, if that's where we were. The pompano, broiled over the low fire, tasted good. Of course we were eating little but what came from the sea. Fish, langosta, mussels, or the eggs from sea urchins, those small, black, round sea animals with sharp spines that attach themselves to the reefs. Timothy had tried to make a stew from seaweed, but it tasted bitter. Then he tried to boil some new sea grape roots, but they made us ill. The only thing that ever worked for him was sea grape leaves, boiled first in seawater, and then cooked in fresh water. But above us, 40 feet from the ground, Timothy said, was a feast. Big, fat, green coconuts. When we'd landed, there were a few dried ones on the ground, but the meat in them was not very tasty. In a fresher one, There was still some milk, but it was rancid. At least once a day, especially when we were around the hut, Timothy would say, "'Tis outrageous dem coconut hang up in de sky when we could use de milk and meat." Or he'd say, "Timothy my own self long ago could climb de palm very easy." Or hinting, and I guess looking up at them, "Philippe, I do believe you be getting outrageous strong here on de island." He made a point of saying that if he were only 50 again, he could climb the tree and slice them off with his knife. But at 70-odd, he did not think he could make it to the top. That morning over breakfast, Timothy said, looking to the tops of the palms, I'm sure, "A little milk from de coconut would be good now. Eh, Philippe?" As yet, I didn't have the courage to climb the palms. "Yes, it would," I said. Timothy cleared his throat, sighed deeply, and put the coconuts out of his mind. But I knew he'd try me again. He said, "Dem devilin' coconuts aside, your mother would never be knowin', you know." I asked why. "You are very brown and very lean," he said. I tried to imagine how I looked. I knew my shirt and pants were in tatters. My hair felt ropey. There was no way to comb it. I wondered how my eyes looked, and asked Timothy about that. "They look without cease," he said. "They stare, Philippe." "Do they bother you?" Timothy laughed. "Not me. Every day I think what rare good luck I have that you be here with my own self on this outrageous Humbug Island." I thought a while, and then asked him, "How long was it before that friend of yours, that friend in the Barbados, could see again?" Timothy replied vaguely, "Oh, many month I do recall." "But you told me on the raft it was only 3 days."
"Did I say that?"
"Yes." "Well," Timothy said, "'twas a long time ago, but he got his sight back, to be true." He paused a moment, then said, "Now, I tell you, we got much work to do today." I noticed more and more that Timothy always changed the subject when we began to talk about my eyes. He would make any kind of an excuse. "What work?" I asked. "Now, let me see," he said. "For one thing, we must make another catchment, and we must go to the reef for food, and—" I waited. Timothy finally exploded. "Now that is a lot of work, Philippe." "To be true,"